punching the air in celebration.
Kevin Bacon just went...
Kevin Bacon?
Invisible Man.
Hollywood. Oh, see.
Oh, yeah. That's,
that's tenuous.
Christian Slater, if you want the sequel.
Really? I haven't seen the sequels.
Hollow Man 2, one. Straight to DVD.
Nice.
Yeah. Haven't seen it. Hello. I'm Paul Carenza.
I'm John Sands.
And I'm Jennifer Masters.
And this is Movie Banter.
Yes.
Combined, united. United we are many. Divided we are few.
Well, three.
I don't know. Can be.
Sounded quite dramatic.
Let's go with that.
Not profound, yeah.
Bit bleak.
It is a bit. It's been a while, hasn't it?
Because we did the quiz.
Well, it's been a while for us. It feels like it's been a while.
Yes.
Oh, we did.
Yeah. Although that, but that wasn't a proper one. We weren't really debating films.
We haven't
talked
about a film for a while.
No.
But
scheduling and things. But now we're back. But none of you have emailed anyway, so you don't care.
Yeah, screw you.
Yeah.
No, easy,
well,
hang on.
No.
Easy, no.
Sorry, unscrew you. Unscrew.
Yeah, twist and shout. No. but yes, welcome. This is where we talk about films and you know, listen and then don't email us. And then we feel sad and alone.
We're putting a lot of pressure on them now. It's okay. You know, if you want to get in touch, that's fine. If you don't, well, that's fine too.
We know people listen. We have technology to track these things.
We have ways.
We know people. Yeah, they'll find you.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Mr. Google Feedburner is going to hunt you down. And no. Yeah, so we have films to talk about.
We do.
We have lots of films to talk about.
There's also been award nominations, which I've only just remembered, which I haven't paid any attention to at all.
Maybe we can say that for next
time.
One.
Yeah, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
We'll cover it. But it's all the obvious things.
This time round, I'm not really paying as much attention to it. I think maybe I've got a bit jaded in my ears. It's too much listening to Mark Kermode, who's just ranting on about how they all don't really matter because... Okay, let me just give his opinion.
Right? Yeah.
Okay.
Which is which I'm slightly exaggerating, but it's the fact that the Golden Globes, which have now happened, and well done, people.
Well done.
Are voted for by the Hollywood Foreign Press Association.
Yes.
Who are answerable to no one. And there's this whole thing about perks and stuff. And, you know, they all sort of get taken out for dinner and given holidays and stuff by the production companies and the distributors. And then the Oscars shortlist is normally based on the Golden Globes in some way.
Mm.
And so therefore, the Oscars, which are meant to be the big film calendar thing of the year, is sort of based on which production companies dined the correct people back in December.
I see.
Yeah.
And so therefore, you get some great films which are missed off, and you get some rubbish films which are there. So,
yeah. They should all just do it, like, or especially the Academy, should just do it by everyone just votes for, you know, what do you think was your favourite film? And then they just collects all the votes, takes the top five, and say, essentially, these are the nominations.
Isn't that really what's meant to be going on?
Or should be.
You'd like to think.
Because don't you? It is actually an Academy of people recognised and invited to join them, and then they vote.
But then there's lots of schmoozing involved. But also, I mean, they can't, you know, people can't see every film because they're all working people.
But yeah. Exactly. Which this is the problem. This is when you get these big Oscar people who vote in the Academy because they've won before, whatever, but who are actors who are now in their 70s and 80s and 90s who can't be bothered with going to see every film.
Yeah.
And so they might see the big five or big ten.
And you'll be sent screeners, but that's still a big chunk of your day.
And then what they do for the other films, this, you know, best cinematography or best foreign film, they get friends around and say, do you want to vote for this one? This is what happens, they do.
Really?
And their friends and their pool cleaners and all that sort of stuff go, my pool cleaner's Polish, therefore for best foreign film, I'll vote for the Polish one. And it's literally that sort of stuff. It's just a bit demoralising.
Well, yeah.
That is a bit sad.
You know. Anyway,
who's the most reputable awards then? Who do you think really? Which awards give
BAFTAs? Because that is in no way exactly the same as the American system. But it's British, which means there's a fundamental sense of honour underlying the whole thing.
Because we haven't got the land for it.
Well, very true. So, we don't have pools because we haven't got the weather for it. Well,
exactly.
So it's fine.
So there you are. If that reason alone means that we are honest.
Yeah. But I think we do just have cleaners.
We have got cleaners.
Who may be Polish.
I don't. So,
yeah. I've got cleaners.
No,
nor do I. Well, but none of us vote in the
Oscars. So we should vote for the Oscars, is what we said.
No,
because we've got cleaners.
We're keeping it real.
No, because then it becomes like a populist award thing where you'll get a bunch of spotty teenagers saying that Transformers Dark of the Moon was the best film of the 21st century.
True. Well, what we'll have to do is have Movie Banter Awards,
The Banter Awards.
The banters.
Mm. Where we only pick categories that apply to the films we've seen.
Yeah.
That's handy.
So we won't cover... Well, we could cover foreign language, but only like four films.
Yeah. That's more to do with the fact that they don't actually show that many foreign films in our area. It's quite hard to go and see. Like The Artist. I'm not going to be able to go and see that one.
It's
not.
Yeah, it is on. It's on in Guildford.
Is it?
Yeah.
It is now.
It's on.
It is now.
It was on this week.
Oh. Just
and is on next week as well.
Yes.
I'm going on Tuesday. You may not be able to.
Oh.
This is a discussion for another time.
I wouldn't do it now.
Oh, no, this is now. This is now more. We can invite everyone along. Well, come along.
For when we do the banters or the banter awards or whatever.
Yeah.
We normally do a summary of the year at some point, which we haven't done yet because we were a bit delayed. But we'll do, maybe we'll tie in with the awards.
Yeah.
But I did know, I've already done my little shortlist of my favourite 10 films of the year. And I've noticed that my number one and number three are documentaries this year. Only from number two and four onwards are fiction. I don't know what point I was going to make, but therefore
you,
I'm quite
you watch interesting films.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. So we can have some wonderful categories.
Exactly.
That's the main
best
thing.
Chris Pine film.
Yeah.
Best Back to the Future film, all basically
all the greats.
Yes. But anyway,
good.
Yes,
so we should get on with the podcast. Really,
well, yes, should really.
This pre-banter.
Yes, because we had a lot of time, not so much off, but a lot of time was a weird scheduling times, which meant that we've backed up huge loads of films, which now we saw ages ago and might now be on DVD, so they'll be more relevant to people.
Yeah,
very true.
But even if not, then frankly, no one ever. Actually, we always worry about this, and no one has ever emailed in. At all. No one's agreed on it. To say, only review current films. I couldn't care less about DVDs you've seen. I think people are generally... The few people who listen to this... Some.
Did you stop doing this down?
Sorry, I'm British. It's what we do. No, I mean, a reasonable number listen to it. But I think people generally just listen because they want to hear about films.
Yeah.
Whatever films they are. So, yeah.
If you want more current films, let us know. No, let us know, and then we'll try and see what we can do.
Really?
We'll try.
Yeah, I know.
Just email.
But also, because it seems a lot of the films we've reviewed, we've got a lot of listeners all over the world. I'm trying to do us up again.
Yes.
And so often the film that we're reviewing has come out, a year ago, or isn't out for another year.
It's all shuffled. So basically, any film we ever talk about, someone will be able to see it somewhere.
Yeah,
is the main thing.
Exactly.
And in the world, the world of Love Film and Netflix, you just stick it on your list and think it's worth watching.
Yes.
So, for example, this time we're going to talk about such films as. I can't read them because my glasses
it's too far away.
So,
right, we've got The Iron Lady and Immortals and 50-50 and Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1
and
Take Shelter, which I have no idea what that is.
Ah, well, I will reveal all later.
Fair
and then
enough.
We'll talk about Take Shelter.
Oh dear.
Woohoo!
Once we cover our eyes.
And then you will take shelter.
We could just do it in the order that they're there.
Well, let's keep it
okay.
Off,
which is The Iron Lady, which is Maggie Thatcher's biopic.
So it's the third in the Iron series, isn't it?
Yes.
After the Iron Giant and Iron Man.
Yep.
And Iron Man 2, of course, is the fourth.
Well, yes.
The Iron Lady.
Yeah, this is more the prequel. Or the post-op.
Awesome. That would be great. What an amazing mashup that would be.
What a combo. Makes no sense. You should watch them all in order. Have an Iron Man, and then Jeremy Irons. They'd do some ironing.
Margaret Thatcher taking on Mickey Rourke with his electric whips.
That would work.
Could work.
The lady is not for turning.
That's true. In the Houses of Parliament, that could work.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Anyway. I haven't seen it, so you'll have to tell me about this.
I've
never heard of Thatcher.
Who?
Who is she?
Who? Well, see, this is where I think Jen and I slightly disagree. I did enjoy it.
Yeah.
But I think we had slightly different takes on it.
Yeah.
It's Margaret Thatcher's life, but it's a lot of it in sort of flashbacks from the present day.
Yes. It's kind of set, the present day is Maggie Thatcher, getting on in years, suffering from a little bit of dementia. And it's quite an emotional film, I thought, because it's dealing with the confusion and her grief over the loss of her husband, Dennis. And I thought it was very, very sad. And it's during this confusion that she's looking back and thinking, and different things are sparking her memories. And as a result, we sort of travel with her through history, through her history. And I thought it was... It's a little bit romantic in a way. It's quite an emotional interpretation.
Because for a lot of all the present day stuff is quite a few years after Dennis has died, but she's still sort of seeing him and talking to him.
As if he's still there.
Yes, which I think is it's partly reflective of their relationship, but mainly her dementia.
Yeah.
And I think that's what I had a slight problem with. But again, I think it's just a different perception, because I would rather have... a lot of the present day stuff... to me, just felt like kind of wasted screen time. She's lived a hugely important, involved life. Lots of stuff gone on. And I would rather have seen their relationship and add sort of the human quality to it, but see their relationship develop over the course of actual events.
Yes.
Rather than sort of see the two of them hardly together, but see some important political thing, and then flash forward with her chatting to him about it, this hallucination of him. Because that's not real. That's not documented on anything. That's just... It's sort of a writer's creation.
More fictional, more creative.
Yeah. Well, but their actual relationship is documented and all happened, so I'd like to see it go that way. And then cover his death as well, which isn't really talked about.
No, it's not. It's...
So sort of lead up to that, and then that would add this sort of emotional impact of the loss, and then have a bit at the end
of
the
day. So in that sense, does it not feel like a proper biopic? Because it's not... using more fictitious events than...
No, because it's the only fictitious bit is sort of the conversation she has with him in the present day. And all the other stuff is all factual. But it just felt a little bit sort of a greatest hits. Mm. Sort of, she wandering around and sees a Falklands monument thing on her table and say, oh, let's see the Falklands. Like, it was 5 minutes of the Falklands and then back
quite
to the present
like
day.
That.
No, but it felt like that a little bit.
But I thought it was more about seeing her grow in strength to this pinnacle moment when she's obviously speaking to the American ambassador about the Falklands and Meryl Streep's just fantastic doing that. It's really, really great. And then you see her decline. It's the way that it chops between the two. I think it's about all the loss. It's quite an emotional piece because you see how much she's lost and how she's different from how she was. There's sparks of it underneath. You can see that she's obviously still got an excellent mind, but that it's a shadow of its former self. And so I wouldn't say enjoy because it was very poignant, but that's the bit that I really got into and got swept along with.
Okay.
And so even if it wasn't that political in many ways, I mean, obviously it covered lots of important events, but I just thought it was a great film about an interesting woman.
It was more just about her as a person rather than as a politician in a way.
I don't think you can separate the two, but yeah.
Right.
Okay.
No, I think it's just a medium choice. I think I would have rather had it more conventionally told and covering with lots of the same feelings, whereas you seem to like essentially the way it was done.
I did. I think it added to the fact that it darted around, it added to the sense of confusion and you had to really think about what was going on. And I mean, this film, I did not expect to really enjoy it, but it made me cry 3 times.
Oh, really?
Watching it, yeah.
Wow. And only 2 of those when I punch you in the face for crying too much.
Wow.
it was very, very... sad the way that you see this woman speaking to her dead husband. I mean,
did they include the interview that she did with someone about the Falklands, about who someone got the better of her on her interview? No.
Okay.
No. Well, look, it's on YouTube. I don't know if they included that. But it does show the weaker, it's one of the few times that she was shown in a weaker way in public because some granny had phoned up a TV phone-in, basically got the better of her.
It's more of a positive take than a negative one, but again, but not overly so. It's not glorifying her too much, and it does pitch that she did make a lot of very, very unpopular decisions, but at least showing her mindset behind it, and it wasn't just haha, let's screw over the poor. I mean, she had reasons for doing it all, which a lot of people disagreed with, but then also to show the decline as well, and that she was quite bullying in cabinet meetings. And the personality clash side comes across as well.
Well, the fact that obviously she'd sort of become accustomed to having her way, but the fact that the strength of her mind is what got her success before, and the fact that it was time for a different tact. But she, in a way, was kind of unchangeable in that way.
Mm.
But Streep is the worst thing for Streep.
Oh,
yeah, she is very good. It's weird. The trailer where you'd only see it at the very end, looked a little bit, I was just thinking of it, it's not quite right. But in the context of the whole film, you just sort of buy into it almost immediately. Yes. As just that's her being her.
Yeah. I would say it's kind of tough for the younger actress playing the young Margaret Thatcher.
Yes.
I'm next to Meryl Streep doing her thing. She wasn't that great. Unfortunately.
Well, if you're going to play, I get up to Meryl Streep, it's tricky.
Yeah, yes. It's very tricky. Yeah.
I hear Olivia Colman plays Carol Thatcher.
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, she was fantastic.
Yeah, she's good.
Really, really good. Yeah. I mean, the fact that Carol Thatcher is quite a character anyway, to actually have... Mm. It was quite an accurate almost depiction.
Well, there's quite a wasp buzz for Olivia Colman from her role in Tyrannosaur.
Yes, which I haven't seen,
I haven't seen the film either, but... I hear she's very good in it. Good for her because she's done.
Yeah, she's come
from
a comic
Rev and things like that.
Yeah,
on telly, and now she's off to Hollywood.
Yeah. So yeah, so Alter, so, yeah. I think it's good. It shouldn't be too divisive.
One to watch.
Yeah. Immortals, however, moving along.
Oh yes.
is less good. The trailer makes it look like a more serious 300, and it sort of is, and that's sort of the problem.
Yeah.
Because
I think that's bang on.
Pretty much. Because Clash of the Titans, sort of grew on me a little bit, because I think I was expecting it to be mindless drivel, and it ended up being fractionally more than that. So you're going to think, oh, all right, it's all right. And 300 is of all style and minimal substance, but that was it was meant to be all style. And Immortals kind of wants to do. Oh no, I know I like 300 a lot.
Yeah.
But its visual style was so much of a part of it.
Yes.
It could just have coasted by on that. And Immortals visually is quite striking, but ends up being a bit forced. And plot wise, is a bit it just ends.
It's a bit formulaic, to say the least. Mm. It's just funny that, just to put you guys in the picture if you haven't seen it, the set designer had a field day, okay? It's trying to make it, because it obviously doesn't have that pedigree that 300 did with the graphic novel, it's trying to sort of create this world. And it's very hard to relate to a world that's made out of pure rock, and people decide to inhabit cliff faces.
It's like, there's a village carved into the side of a cliff. Where no one would ever choose to live.
You know, that's not an idea.
Yeah, if nothing else, why not? On the top of the cliff.
Yeah.
Like, there's not even a rope or a fence or anything.
Or anything, it's just a sheer drop. And there's quite an important scene where the main character has to, for respect to the dead, has to bury his mother. And you're kind of thinking, go on then. How are you going to manage that?
Does it involve flinging?
It's just so silly. It's absurd.
Yes.
But
and they got the Minotaur. The Minotaur is sort of in it, but isn't really. Mm. It's an overly stylized, rather than an actual weird man with a bull's head. Is a sort of
a
weird, yeah, it's like a big thug who doesn't speak, with a sort of a barbed wire bull-shaped head thing.
Right. He doesn't eat either, apparently.
No, so it's just all a bit. They kind of touch on the mythology. It's pretty
much
that.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
But they touch on a lot of the mythology, but then change a lot of it. So it's all just a little bit.
I saw the trailer. I thought, I can't be asked.
Yeah.
I'm not going to bother.
No, you were right.
I didn't.
Yeah, no, it's fine.
There's some horrific bits, and is it Mickey York in it as well? He's the bad guy.
Yes.
He's just like a big, what was it? A big clam head. It's just his evil kind of helmet, just like a lobster claw. He's just like, he's just absurd.
Yeah.
He was quite good in it, though.
He did the best he could.
Yeah.
Like Henry Cavill. Who's the Superman. Upcoming Superman? And that's the acting in it is all right, but it's just, I think the main, because it's the same director who did The Cell,
right?
Whose name escapes me, which is Jennifer Lopez.
He's got a lot to
answer for. Yeah, and it is. He's clearly got a very interesting visual mind, but I think he needs. I think it'd be better to have him as sort of a creative director on a film, and have someone else to sort of steer it. Yeah, it's a little bit George Lucas-esque. Yeah, you've got the visuals, but you need a bit more. Mm. Yeah,
it's like you have this army attacking, and there are, from the CGI, I mean, hundreds and hundreds of thousands of these bad guys just charging.
It's hundreds
down
of thousands.
Hundreds of thousands.
Really?
Yeah. All different colours and everything. And they're all charging down a corridor, which is about 4 metres wide.
Yeah, something like that.
And so you just have these, and you just imagine people at the back going, right, Barry, how you doing? Going to go and kill some people. I'm not going to be any left now. It's just ridiculous. It's just not going to work.
Are they all charging down to attack the village on the cliff?
No.
No one told us it's a cliff.
If you can, it's just worth a laugh to see how absurd this is.
I'm fairly sure, also, if I'm remembering right, that Henry Cavill gets a very good. So, well, actually, he's not that good as a rousing speech, essentially saying, there are millions of people charging down this corridor. We need to fight to defend our country. And if memory serves, he pretty much gives that speech and pretty much goes, everyone charge down there and fight them. And then he just sort of hangs around and just waits. He doesn't lead the charge. He sort of dispatches them down.
Everyone
and then joins in a bit later.
As soon as you've got a few people dead, it would just block up and you'd be fine anyway.
Well, he's got a wall of corpses blocking them.
Just go down the corridor, pick a different route.
Because they can't do that, because 300 did do that, didn't they?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, that would have actually happened, though.
Right. Yes.
Was it Big Train, Simon Pegg?
Yes.
Announcement. He's
always Braveheart-esque, standing in front of a row of soldiers, saying, "Yes, before we charge into this battle, I must say to you the most important thing I've ever said: charge!" And and runs off by himself and gets shot.
And everyone
else just stands there looking a bit awkward. Yeah, so Immortals, bit silly.
Very silly.
Yes. 50-50, however.
Yes.
See, this, I don't think I'd seen the trailer. This is Seth Rogen and Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
Oh, this is the cancer.
It's the cancer comedy.
Yes.
Which sounds like a terrible idea, and yet, for me anyway, I mean, well, like you're saying, you cried during the Iron Lady. I mean, I, maybe not in floods of tears, but I properly cried in this. Because it does a very, very good and unusual job of properly balancing the comedy, not the tragedy, but the sort of the emotional side and the comic side.
About 50-50?
About 50-50, okay, pretty much. Yeah. But exactly in an exactly right way. And you've got Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who is a young man who's, you know, his age, which must be, I'm guessing, 30-ish.
Yeah.
Seth Rogen being his friend. Joseph Gordon-Levitt gets diagnosed with cancer. He's sort of having back pain. Goes to the doctor and just... So his diagnosis, where he sort of doesn't entirely understand what the doctor's saying because he can't quite believe that's it. And he's the kind of character who is very... He's relatively stoic and has got... His mother's sort of got problems he's looked after. His girlfriend's a bit dippy, so he's got to try and... So you've got to try and manage these people while also looking after himself because other people aren't doing a brilliant job of doing it. Mm. And so he's just sort of got to get on with this. But then also with his friends, you know, who start to realise it's a bigger deal and... how the toll it takes in his relationship. But, yeah, it's hard to pick. It's just sort of him, a chunk of his life while he deals with this and building up towards surgery. And it's not, yeah, I don't think it's giving too much away to say. Actually, well, in fact, it's not at all, because it's based on the writer actually had cancer and is quite young. So it's kind of semi-autobiographical. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the writer is still around to write this story maybe gives you a clue how the film might end. But it is all about the journey of it. And it's just, it's very, very moving because it's all about friendships and relationships and how it affects them and how he copes. Yeah, and I found it genuinely touching and extremely well made and also genuinely funny. And there are moments of proper comedy in it. And sort of going to counselling sessions and initially feeling like it's a complete waste of time. And just thinking, no, I'm fine, and then realising the stages he's going through, and then sort of, and there is a slight romantic subplot of hitting it off with the counsellor and girlfriend issues, but not in a too contrived a way. It's a slightly more natural, yeah. So it's a very watchable, very likable film.
I heard good things. Actually, yeah. Let's give it a go.
Yeah,
it is well worth a watch.
The sequel 80/20 is even sadder.
Well, yes.
Oh.
Yes, and
is that too harsh?
Yeah. It's not good, is it?
The title, in case no one's worked it out, comes from the fact that he asks the doctor what the odds are, and he gets told 50-50. So, but I really, really enjoyed it. Also, I'm slightly worried I may be the only person who's seen this next film.
No, yeah. I've seen it.
Oh, you've seen it as well?
That's one of the lot I've seen.
Hey,
really?
Yes.
So the one girl in the room hasn't seen Twilight Breaking Dawn Part 1. Oh dear.
Go on then, guys.
It's more our kind of film.
Oh, very much so.
You know?
Well, half of it is our kind of. It's very much a film of two halves, I thought. In the first half is all wedding. Wedding, lovey dovey, honeymoon. Hey, sweet. Look at the dress and look at all the guests, and isn't it all pretty? And then the second half is kind of, hey, something's actually happening. which is, I realise, a very male take on it all.
No, that's fine.
But I'd say it fits in with the first and third ones in that being relatively watchable from a normal person's point of view who doesn't really care about
second one.
Oh, because the second one makes you want to tear my own face off.
They should sort of remake that, really, because then the rest of the franchise is pretty good.
Yeah.
And then that way it will be...
I can't think who did the second one, if it was the same person who's done the others. No, I think it was someone different. Second one's dreadful. And the third, but this one, I mean, it has a couple of moments of levity. Doesn't take itself too seriously at times.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because the last one was starting to do that, became a bit more self-aware, which is better.
And I mean, the basic plot is that Edward and Bella get married, and then she gets pregnant very quickly, and it's all a little bit whoa, and then she starts essentially dying because whatever it is that she's been implanted with is sort of sucking all the life out of her. And
so
the werewolves.
She become a vampire then?
Are we telling?
Okay.
She wants to, but equally. She's really quite... They do a very good job of making her look horribly anorexic by the end of this film.
Oh, right.
Because the whole point is that this... Whatever is in her, and no one can see, even sort of vampires with extra future sight things,
the
they don't know if it is a baby or if it's some weird demonic mutant creature or yeah. something. But whatever it is, it's... I mean, in the same way that any pregnant woman has to provide nutrients to a baby,
yeah,
this creature, thing, possible baby, anything else, is massively depleting her of everything.
Well, yeah, the nice thing is it works with the logic of the film and the books yes. and the story's been set up. So
yeah.
So we go, okay, I'll buy that.
Yeah, no, exactly. Sense. And so it's a real problem that she might die before the baby is properly developed. And so she ends up looking very hollow cheek, anorexic, skin and bone. And I don't know... Yeah, whether she would have just lost weight over a lot of time, or I think CGI must be involved to a degree because there are some.
Well, she's quite small anyway. I think a bit of shading probably.
Yeah, but I mean, you see like properly bones on the shoulder, and it's really unattractive, which sounds callous, but yeah, I mean, it's unhealthy looking.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the werewolves think that this baby is a predictor of evil things to come, so want to kill her. I think they want to kill the baby, which kind of means her as well.
Mm.
But then Jacob and Edward obviously want to protect her, so conflict there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then that ends on sort of a cliffhanger. I've read the story. I haven't read the book, but I've read the gist of the story.
Yeah.
And it seems like this film ends kind of like 4/5 of the way through the book, almost.
Oh, right.
I wish I could have wrong.
Because this is the part one, so there's going to be another
whole film. And from what little I know of what's to come... I think they must have expanded on that quite a bit.
Well, yeah, but to be honest, a lot of the critical reviews of this film were that for a Twilight film, not a lot happens
yes.
over the course of it. There's a lot of dragging out, like the wedding thing and the honeymoon.
Yeah, there's a lot of wedding and honeymoon stuff.
It's a very different Twilight film in that there's a couple of fights and chases and things like that, which are okay, but maybe that, in fact they're probably the weaker parts of it in many senses. Some of the CGI is maybe a bit with the wolves, but...
Mm.
But it's a very different Twilight film in that it's a bit more soap opera-ish. Now we know yes. the characters. It is a lot. There's a whole chunk of stuff which is just them on honeymoon, which
yeah.
is a bit like feels like watching someone's honeymoon photos. Okay, yes, well now you're at that clifftop yeah. location, and now you're going to bed. They're very nice.
Exactly. Oh, and they've broken the bed because he's a vampire.
All that sort of thing. Yeah. And so it does. It is quite. You could argue there's a bit of a get on with it.
Well, yes.
But
yeah, I think you could.
I think the whole point is we like the characters.
I suppose the girls probably want to see all that.
That's the thing,
stuff.
And yeah, without wishing to sound too misogynistic or over simplified,
I think the cute audience is
yes,
teenage girls.
Yeah, I mean your teenage girl demographic, I'm fairly sure, will be very happy with the first half, and the second half as well. But that's more the first half is more for them.
Yes,
whereas as a 30-year-old man, yeah. I was there going, "Bring on the fighting! I want a wolf to tear someone apart."
I started listening to a new podcast. Which is the BBFC podcast. They've started doing. Well, there are only 2 episodes in. It's very good. Recommend it to you.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm. And it's them talking about the decisions they've made recently about the ratings of things.
Okay.
And the most recent one was talking about this film because it was rated 12A, and they said they were surprised.
It is quite.
Yeah.
Yeah. The end gets quite.
Well, you can tell they had quite a lot of feedback from people about that, and a lot of the teenage audience, I think, were quite surprised at. I think because there's a whole pregnancy, birth kind of situation.
Right.
It's a little bit bloody, but without it being gore and violence.
Mm.
So they've got that tricky decision where normally they go blood equals gore violence area.
Right.
But this isn't that. This is, you know, it's the natural spirit of life.
Yes.
Except
it's a little bit,
and a bit
weird
nasty.
And supernatural. Yeah. And it's quite it's traumatic as well. Because it's like cracking.
Yeah.
My mind is boggling right
and
now.
Oh, yeah,
given the target audience are mostly female, who mostly haven't had kids and their bodies are changing as well. I think they have a lot of audience going, huh? Do you want to see
is this a normal birth?
Exactly. So there was the BBFC actually said they expected a lot more complaints or comments about the rating in comparison with the sex scene.
Mm.
And actually, I think they've had one complaint about the sex scene from all the feedback they've had. And most of it, 99% of it, has been about, you know, labour.
Mm.
Yeah.
And which is, you know, given the target audience, I can see they go, help!
Yeah.
But then, you know, if 12-year-old girls were to watch One Born Every Minute on Channel 4, then they'd probably equally write in and go, I don't want to do that. Yeah. So, you know.
So it's arguably it's a sex education film of sorts.
In many ways
of saying, the sex scene may look great, but just remember, if you're not careful, this is the end of it. So maybe pace yourself.
It's quite interesting that up till now, a lot of people are going, you know, are you team Jacob or team Edward sort of thing? And a lot of people are going, Edward swoon, I wish I was with Edwood. And they get to this film and go, oh, blimey, I'm definitely not with Edward, because, if that's what it would do to you, then
yes.
I don't want vampires.
Oh, I actually
I'm team
see
not being
now.
Torn in half.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah.
kind of, at the same time, I don't want to, but I kind of want to see.
They're probably
this.
Making it sound worse than it was, no, but it gives the impression of being traumatic more than you don't see anything too hideous. But there's a lot of implied, hideousness.
I think they tell the story well anyway.
I sat and watched it and actually came out thinking, that's all right. I didn't regret watching it, unlike the second one, which...
So I'll tell you very quickly about Take Shelter.
Yes, please do.
Take Shelter is a film that I didn't like.
Oh.
Good. Goodbye. Let me tell you this. It stars two people, Michael Shannon, who was in Revolutionary Road.
Oh, yes.
Which was a critically acclaimed
film. And
he's going
to be General Zod in the new Superman film.
Oh, yes, he is, that's right. Very, very good actor.
Yes.
Very good actor. And he was in Revolutionary Road, which is critically acclaimed, but I found long and tedious and dull and boring, even though all the critics loved it.
I quite liked it.
I quite liked it.
Well, okay, there you go. It also stars Jessica Chastain.
I know the name.
Who was in Tree of Life, which was a critically acclaimed film, which I found long and tedious and boring.
So two long, boring acting films.
I should have learned from this. Sure enough. Take Shelter was also, and I read the reviews before going, and I thought, it's a critically acclaimed film that every reviewer seems to like. I should have realised.
Should have known.
That I found it long and tedious and boring and dull, even though everyone else liked it. So clearly critics know something I don't.
What happens?
I couldn't really tell you.
What happens is that Paul falls asleep. That's the plot.
It's broadly about a couple and suburban America. It's set against the backdrop of job loss and, financial ruin and that sort of thing. But this guy gets a bit obsessed with the fact he thinks there's a storm coming and he wants to build a shelter in his back garden. It's going to cost about $1,000 or whatever. And he needs money, but of course he hasn't got any money. His wife is the sensible one going, well, we haven't got that. And why do you want to build a shelter? I don't think there's a storm coming. And he wants to do it anyway. So it's that kind of, it's about, the dishonesty between him and his wife and he wants to do it. It's also about mental illness and the fact that he's worried he's turning into his mother and the fact that his mum's got this mental illness as well.
Right.
And he's thinking, if I want to build a big shelter, I'm probably as sick in the head as my mum was. In many ways he is, but in many ways maybe he isn't, maybe there is a storm coming.
Does a storm come?
In the end, I don't really care. Is the storm metaphorical? Is it about financial ruin? Is it about Wall Street? I don't know. But I was bored! I will never watch another film with those two people in it.
Fair enough.
So, yes, I should learn my lesson.
Okay.
Fair enough. Yes.
Okay.
Anyway, that's that.
Right, that's a lot. Yes, we need to wrap up because we're on a schedule.
Well, but, so Desert Island Flicks this week. Pick a film that you like and go and watch it on a desert island.
There you go.
And
that way, problem solved.
Exactly. You choose this week.
Yes.
This week is over to you.
But we'll see you, speak to you, hear, be heard from next time.
Exactly. Bye. So, bye-bye.